Anyway, I just wanted to say thank you very much to all of you for coming this weekend. We really appreciate it. I'm sure someone else has told you this before. Probably Al mentioned it before, but this is our backyard party. This is we grew up like about 45 minutes away from here. It's really cool to have you guys here. We appreciate it. We appreciate all the great musicians that have been kind enough to honor us with their presence and their great music. And this guy is no exception. I'm very pleased to introduce Mr. Leo Kottke. He will also be doing some stand-up. He's got more material than I do. But thank you very much. Come on, you people, get up here, get up here. Run. Once again, thank you very much. And you're about to be treated once again. This guy is, I've been listening to him for years, and he's definitely an acoustic inspiration for guitar players everywhere. And I really appreciate it that he's here. Really appreciate it that you're here. So, Leo Kottke, everyone. Thank you.
Might be in tune. Thank you. I thought I'd play that because there's a new record out with that on it, and I'm reminded every time I play it of a record release party that the label threw for me some years ago. After, you know, I mean, we all complain about promotion, and this time they put up this tent and a bunch of people came and went up and played, and when I was done, the president of the company, Ron Goldstein, came up. He runs Blue Note now. He said, "What did you think?" I said, "This is great. What promotion? You flatter me. Blah, blah, blah. Thank you." He said, "You like the tent?" I said, "I usually hate tents. This tent works beautifully. It's a city block, practically, but it sounds good in here. So you like the sound?" "Yeah, the sound system is excellent. The food, well, I'm headed over toward the food, and it's free, and there's a lot of it. I'm just amazed. It's supposed to cost the label a fortune." He says, "An open bar over there." "Yep. And all these people, yeah, all these people, I know some of them even." He said, "To promote your new record." I said, "Thank you very much." And he said, "You know, you were up there for an hour and a half, and you didn't play anything off of the new record. So just to make it feel better, I thought I'd play something off of this new record. I usually manage to play requests about a week after I've heard them." This is one of my... I can't talk and play at the same time, so... I learned a lot from this tune written by Pete Seeger. Thank you. tune by Eddie Reeves and Alex Harvey, I can't play anywhere without playing this tune because of what it allows you to do on the guitar, which is this. That's enough. No, I don't have to. When I started playing the guitar, a chord, any chord, because I'd spent the previous 12 years on a trombone, it sounded like heaven to me. I started with this, and I would just do that. I can still do that. And I think I played the E chord for about 2 weeks, hours every day. It was magnificent. It was all I needed. I was happy then, you know. And then one day, I did that. And my fate was sealed, you know. I was screwed. So this was written for a wedding. It was written under duress, really. Eddie and Alex were friends of the bride and groom, who they knew would never be able to get along with each other long enough to call it a marriage. They'd already demonstrated that more than a few times by breaking up over and over and over again. But the way they saw it, they were getting back together again over and over and over again. And I suppose in that sense, everybody was right, and it just depends on how jaundiced your view is or how far away you are from being in either the bride or the groom's skin, and in this case, quite a ways. So they said, so they had to write a tune to celebrate their marriage, which was rough enough, but then they had to play it at the marriage, at the wedding, rather. I don't think they intended the marriage. And pretend that, this was the greatest thing that could happen to them. When everyone there knew it was a terrible mistake. It's easier, and I'm not making this up, it's easier to play funerals than it is to play weddings. Not because I have any sour point of view about weddings. They're just much more, fraught. It's dangerous. So the wedding took place on a beach in Nashville, which always gets me. Marriage ensued, and so did a divorce about 3 years later, vindicating the author's point of view and completely exploding any pretensions to the opposite point of view that the bride and groom had at one time held. Feels like there should be a... Well, maybe I should play the tune now. That's what I'm saying. Since I recorded this thing, more than one couple has approached me and asked me if I would either play this or the wedding at the wedding, or have told me we're going to play that at our wedding. And I would say, have you heard the story behind that tune? I didn't care. I think I'm on their side, actually. Telephone rings, somebody says, baby, what you doing? I've been wondering where you've been, now and then, I think about you and me. No use fighting about things we can't recall, 'cause it don't matter now at all. Just come on in, baby, we'll laugh and sing. We'll make love at the telephone bell. Ring, ring, doorbell ring, baby, come on in. I got Mel Blanc on the radio, and I'm glad you came around. I've been feeling down, talking to Tony and Marco. You know they make good conversation. City ain't no consolation, 'cause I got love, baby, I'll give you some. Somebody come, let the doorbell ring. While closing a club called the Poison Apple in Detroit, most of which had burned down at the time, and we were holding out in some little dive, and a guy named Mick E. Clark came in and sang this. They said that Louise was not happy. It was written on the wall and window shade. And though she acted bottle of perfume. Flowers and maybe someday. Men brought Louis 10-cent trinket. Their intentions were easily traded. And everybody knew at times she cried. Oh, but women like Louise, they get by. Everybody thought it kind of sad when they found Louise in a room. They'd always put her down below their kind. Still some cried when she died in second. Somewhere to the south, I heard them say, too bad it ended so ugly, too bad she had to go this way. And the wind is blowing cold. So good night, Louise, good night. This guitar is a carbon fiber guitar. They're great outdoors because humidity can't phase them or phase them. They're just the same every time you pick it up. It's really weird. Whereas wood, which I'm going to get to in a minute, is kind of, you know, uppity. It's a little touchy. Sometimes it just won't. Also, you can't overplay these guitars. You can overplay wood, it'll just choke on you. And I tend to get a little too excited, so I'm safer on this kind of stuff. This is a song called, for want of a real title, it was called Disco. Mike Gordon and I recorded this on a record recently. I know he's up here somewhere, I've got my eye. I haven't seen him yet. Playing here tomorrow night. Mm-hmm. oldest tune I've got. I wrote about the third or fourth thing I ever wrote. And I can still get off on it, so I might as well keep playing it. Across from a paper mill. Never been near one of those. It's really impressive, I think, that anyone could want to play the guitar when they're near one. Everything looks better when it's dark. Have you ever noticed that? This does. There was a guy named Alexander King who was raving about a heroin addiction that he'd gotten rid of on some television show when I was a child. And the guy who was talking to him said, "Well, now what's your idea of a good time?" And he said to fill myself up with heroin and go down in the basement, lay down on the floor with my cheek on the cold cement, and listen to Beethoven. And I think I was about 8 years old, and I thought, I want to be him. Fortunately, I didn't completely, finish the picture, but I got close later on. So this is this is called Gewerbige Beat, which is as close as I'll ever get to Beethoven. It's one word in the German language. It's my favorite word in the German language. Gewerbige Beat. Gewerbige Beat is really how you're supposed to say it. If you say Gewerbige Beat, nobody knows what you're talking about. But if you say Gewerbige Beat, they seem to know. My grandparents spoke this language. It was sounded beautiful in my ears. I was tired of vowels by the time I was, you know, prepubescent. The Germans have done for the consonant, I keep saying this, what the Hawaiians have done for the vowel. And it's something that I, for one, am proud of. Vowels, after a while, will tend to, in their kind of greasiness, give you a kind of nausea. I don't know if you've noticed this. Consonants, on the other hand, remain forever astringent. So this next tune, Gewerbegebiet, which means industrial park, it's the most beautiful word in the German language, wasted on something entirely, you know, it could be called X. It doesn't need a word. So come with me now to a dark night in the Gewerbegebiet. I apparently had a relative. Oh, I got one of my relatives. Let me play this. This is a song that I wrote in Australia while my room was flooding in Sydney at the Siebel townhouse. I always stay there when I'm in Sydney. Not because the room floods, but because it's the only place I know. And the room really flooded. It was really, and I had an amp in there and a preamp, and there was some stuff plugged in. There was water all over the floor, and I thought I would remain on the couch as a result. I had the guitar, and I wrote this opus here. It's called Snorkel. Australia is one of the four places where I've nearly drowned. I've come very close, and sometimes I wonder if I didn't drown. Because, you know, maybe that's how it works. But if you die, what gives? How does it? I think other people have dealt with this question. And sitting here outdoors in the dark is no place to deal with it. Except that how would you know if you're dead, how do you know that you're dead? In other words, if when you're dead, you just wind up where you were in the first place, you'll never know. That's what I'm getting at. I don't know if this bothers you, it bothers me. I was playing in Annapolis, and the sound guy afterwards said, hey, I did that. I almost drowned at least once. He said he was standing in a lake, drilling a hole in a dock. And I said, with an electric drill, right? He said, yes. He said, the next thing I knew, I was underwater, just a couple inches below the surface, and I couldn't move. He said, but finally I got out of there, and I said, how do you know? He didn't consider it a very profound question, actually. Most people don't. In Australia, I was diving off of Perth. Most people go where the Great Barrier Reef is. I go where the effluent is from the Swan River and get stuck in a cave. Thank you.
Thank you.
to record this with the immortal Dr. John Harris. A real doctor. Guy that gave up a career in medicine to become a starving piano player in Mount Juliet. Like a stone on what I can't help but see when another man's love means more to you. And the love you show from me, there's no good in no. But let me explain. He's twice the price you've already paid. Thank you. can't go back. It's not the same. Things have changed. While I a tune earlier tonight that, by Pete Seeger that showed me a whole lot about how to lead with the index or the thumb or some other finger than whatever, you know, you're locked into. It sets loose your whole right hand. And whether that's why Pete was doing it, I have no idea, but it worked for me. This tune, I couldn't tell you what it was about this, except maybe I just stole the whole attitude of it, and I've been stealing it ever since. It's written by, here's that bug again. This is my bug. It comes with me everywhere I go. It's not a good bug. But this Little Martha, a tune called Embryonic Journey by Joan McCalkin. Some stuff by Kenny Burrell, Villa-Lobos. This one is, I love this. This came to Duane Allman in a dream. He dreamed this. He dreamed this. Thank you. Corina, Corina, where you've been so long? Corina, Corina, where you've been so long? And I've been worried about you ever since you've been gone. I've got a bird that whistles, I've got a bird that sings, I've got a bird that whistles, a bird that sings. But if I ain't got cold, life don't mean a thing. Thought for about 6 months that I had written. And then one night I was playing it in somewhere. Well, that sound desk looks great for back in the day. And well, anyhow, I was playing it one night. I got distracted by the colored lights. So I realized it was Cripple Creek. Couldn't very well claim to have written that, so. Thank you. I want to thank Mo for bringing me out here in this beautiful place. A pleasure playing here. Really a pleasure. This is another old woman. Well, it's newer than Cripple Creek. I named this after a friend of mine. He was the first person I've known to be taken away to the Nut House. He went there very gladly. And he was later released and became a professor of medieval literature. I think it was in Indianapolis. Perfect evidence of a cure. But he had these really poetic hallucinations. They were all auditory. He would hear loons right around 7 o'clock at night, and the nearest loon was about 200 miles away in Minnesota. And later on, this is the one that I dug, was that he'd hear the hissing of the leaves in the aspen trees. And it would just scare him to death. My kind of guy. So, thanks again. It's always a privilege to play. Thank you for this. Thank you. well, that me and the monitor there, that's a good idea. So it gives Mike a chance to hear something. Huh? Sorry about this. There we go.